Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Masks We Wear by Lee Jacquo, narrated by T.J. Clark and Marie Hawkins. Chapter 1. Spencer, 3 years ago.
What do you mean you're moving here?
My childhood friend Liliana knits her arched brows. The vein in her jaw ticks when she clenches it.
I don't understand. I thought you would be happy, excited even. We've been best friends for 7 years, and even though we only see each other in the summer because of my divorced parents, it's never hurt our friendship. When I'm here, we do everything together. We camp in the backyard, stargaze until the sun wakes up, gorge on popcorn, and watch scary movies. My favorite thing about us is when we talk, even when we run out of things to say. But mixed in with all the good, there's also the crappy. Her parents' affair, my mother's unexplained medical issues, her father's abandonment. Everything kids shouldn't have to go through growing up, we've handled together. After what felt like forever, my mom asked if I wanted to move in with my father to finish the remainder of high school. She knew I liked Washington better, plus the school system has better opportunities for my future. Really, though, Liliana was the first thing to pop in my head. And I said yes so fast I was scared I hurt my mom's feelings. But I was ecstatic. Seeing Liliana during the short 8 weeks of summer wasn't enough. I want to be here all the time. I thought she wanted me here too. Then again, I can't deny the subtle changes I've noticed before our 8th grade year. We lost half our summer when she went to a cheerleading boot camp. Ever since, she started dressing a little differently, putting makeup on, and didn't want to eat junk food with me until 2 in the morning anymore. She said she had to maintain her physique if she wanted to remain on the squad. I didn't mention any of it to her, though. Not even when she dyed her burnt caramel hair blonde and started wearing hazel green contacts. I miss her chestnut eyes. "What's wrong?" I ask, almost scared to hear her response. Absent-mindedly, I shake my head, ridding it of the thoughts. Liliana and I are best friends, through and through. Every one of her secrets, every fear, every sad thought, all of it, belongs to me. I squeeze the small box in my hoodie, if not to make sure it's there, maybe for some luck. I watch as she twirls a fake golden strand between her fingers, her gaze on the ground. My pulse strengthens with each passing second. What is happening? You can tell me, Liliana, I whisper, giving her a soft, reassuring smile. Lily.
I tilt my head, my eyebrows furrowing.
What? It's just Lily now.
Since when?
I don't think you should move here, Spencer, she spits out.
What? A sharp pain echoes through my chest, and I rub at the ache. Liliana. Lily stands, brushing off her blue jeans. My eyes follow her, too surprised to speak.
Is that all she has to say about it? No rationale or explanation?
But then again, her logic doesn't matter. I know it won't change the sting radiating through my veins or the sudden thinness to the air, and I doubt anything will ease my throbbing heart.
Ugh,
why does she have to wear those crap contacts? I used to be able to read her like an open book. If she weren't wearing them, I'd be able to reason with her, maybe see where this bizarre change is coming from. Now, with those contacts that act like drawn curtains, I can't see anything, and I know she can't see me. Did I do something wrong?
Look, I gotta go, Spence. We have another practice.
Lily doesn't wait for a response, and instead disappears through the gate combining our two backyards. I stand like a stick in the mud, fixated on the spot she stood, till the sun's rays fade behind a row of clouds I hadn't noticed before. Running a hand through the side of my hair, I slip the box from my pocket, the box I worked all spring to save up for, and open it. Even in the overcast, the small heart charm sparkles, attached to the James Avery bracelet she's been eyeing since last Christmas. A heaviness moves into my chest, anchoring my racing heart in place. I swallow my thick saliva and look in Liliana's backyard to the treehouse we used to sleep in for days straight. Today was supposed to be the day she knew.
when I finally told her what I've felt since I first laid eyes on her in second grade. I make the decision quickly, before I think better of it, and go inside the gate, fumbling up the old ladder of the treehouse into the small space. We haven't used it in a couple of years, but nothing has changed. An old black rug sits in the middle, posters of our favorite movies and animes pinned to the weathered walls. Two beanbags that are in surprisingly good shape sit in the corner. If I close my eyes, I can almost smell the popcorn and her lavender body cream. Crouching down, I walk to a small chest where we keep all our secret treasures. It mostly contains Georocks, a few trading cards, and a best friend contract we made in the fifth grade. I sigh and slip the bracelet inside. Should she ever come here and look, she'll find my heart with it. I don't need it anymore. Today. I went back home that day, a cloud following me the entire 500 miles to Idaho. It wasn't hard to piece together what happened. She was popular and needed to maintain an image, one I clearly didn't fit. After I figured that out, my decision was made. If she needed me to change, she wasn't worth it. Nothing is worth giving up who you are. At least that's what I told myself every day for the rest of the summer. My best friend in Idaho, William, filled most of my conscious hours with his presence. We overate pizza and watched way too many action movies while I moped. I couldn't help it. No matter what I told myself, I still cared. Like a dumbass. "Good guys don't get the girls," William would tell me, and I never understood why he thought it would cheer me up. It didn't. In fact, it did quite the opposite. I wanted to prove that I could get the girls, even if they weren't the one I wanted. That's when the dark streak happened. I put on some new clothes, developed a steady workout regimen. It didn't take much. I climbed the ranks fast, and the number of girls I got was probably on the unhealthy side. But I didn't care. I was proving William wrong and keeping my mind off of her, which is all I wanted. But the number of fights I found myself in, plus the countless times I was suspended, was not something I meant to happen. My grades never slipped. Hell, I could miss a month and still pass my classes. But it was the look on my mother's face every time she came to school. Upsetting her was the worst kind of punch to the gut. "I don't understand what happened to my precious boy. My sweet boy." That's all she would ever say. No scolding, no punishment, just disappointment. Nothing is worth losing who you are. The two succeeding summers, I didn't go back to my dad's, making excuse after excuse, but really, I couldn't bear the off chance I might see her. So instead, we FaceTimed more, and my dad came to Idaho for visits. Then my mom got her diagnosis, early stages of dementia. We chalked up all the signs to menopause, and in turn prolonged her treatment. They say it's a common mistake, but that's bullshit. If I wasn't fucking around and paid more attention, I would have noticed. It's just the karma for me doing the one damn thing I said I wouldn't ever do. Breaking my mother's heart and conforming to a fucked up society that determines worth by our chiseled abs or how big our dicks are. And that same karma brought me back here to Emerald High. My father had us move in with him to help take care of Mom while also pushing me with my studies. My parents both know I would have dropped out to dote on my mom, and medical school would have been out the window. Even though this is the last place I want to be, it's been fine for 68 days. I've managed to return to my pre-bad boy state and disappear with the sea of other outcasts, keeping my head low and eyes lower. Until now. The one day I was running late and threw on my dad's shoes by mistake is the day I trip and land right at her feet. "Fucking nerd." The way her heel jerks under me, I can tell she wants to kick me. But when we lock eyes, she stiffens. Lily still has the same blonde hair I remember from freshman year. Only now, it looks a lot more natural. The same can't be said for those stupid-ass hazel contacts. From down here, I can tell she's continued to watch her figure, as it is the literal definition of a Coke bottle, and I curse the way my dick twitches in my pants. It's not fair she gets that reaction from me. All this time, and it's as though a day hasn't passed. I'm still putty in her hands. The organ in my chest I haven't felt in ages picks up pace, thumping against my ribcage as though it's found its rightful owner. I've seen her before, a few times from afar, but made sure to disappear before she noticed. It didn't bother me, since the ache stayed dull. But this is different. My entire body fills with moths flapping around in the dark, desperate for the light, something they haven't seen in 3 years. When she recovers, so do I, fumbling to my feet like a dumbass, and taking off before things get worse. Running a hand through my hair, I manage to rush away from the influx of hot air.
If you're going to be a jackass, at least know how to walk.
An unfamiliar, high-pitched voice calls after me. It's grating, and I know it must belong to the cheap platinum Barbie next to her. Jeers and snickers of nearby observers echo in the hallway. Well, if there's any way to announce my arrival, I guess this is as good a time as any. Turning on my heels, I shove my glasses up my nose and look at the pale girl in her eyes. If you're gonna be the school's blow-up doll, at least be a hot one. My gaze flashes to Lily's before shifting back toward the AP hallway. I can feel her eyes on the back of my head, in the endings of every nerve, and in the deepest, darkest part of my soul. Fuck.
Chapter 2. Lily. When the hell did he get back? Scratch that. When the hell did he get so delicious? Even under his thick orange flannel, the muscles in his back and biceps flex when he gets up. I also don't remember his jaw being so defined, or his face being perfectly symmetrical. But his eyes are the same. A swirl of caramel breaks up the smooth brown in a way that almost feels hypnotic. They pull me back to earth, reminding me of who I am, what I was, the things I lost. My biggest fears. My greatest regrets.
Can you believe that, asshole? I mean, seriously.
My friend and co-captain, Amora, drones on about her encounter with Spencer. Spencer Haynes. Holy shit. I blink a few times, a failed attempt to capture one of the dozens of thoughts careening around my mind. The last thing I need to worry about is old secrets being dug up for anyone to find. And Spencer knows just where I buried them. Finally grounding my head, I shrug. Talking isn't one of the things I often do, even when rattled. The less you speak, the less people know. I tried to keep my face neutral as I wiggle my fingers and turn toward the front office.
Where are you going? It's time for lunch.
The sparkle in Amora's usually glossy eyes dims. One hand is propped on a thin hip, while her face is pinched in disgust. She hates being alone with our cheer squad, though I haven't been able to figure out why. My dear friend is the biggest bitch they make in her 5.5-foot size, and she has no qualms displaying it. Bullwig, I call over my shoulder without stopping. I've been putting the guidance counselor off for a while now, but 2 months into my senior year, I know it's no longer an option. At least not a smart one. I have a feeling I know what she's going to say, and I've never been in the mood to hear it. Rotating my increasingly tight shoulders as I reach her office, I can't seem to hinder my thoughts from returning to the mess that just dropped at my feet. Between Spencer and the uncertainty of my future, everything in my mind is becoming a tangled mess. Both unpredictabilities twist around each other like two weeds fighting for dominance in a garden. Both of them spread their tendrils around everything beautiful, threatening to overtake what I've worked so hard to cultivate. I sigh, one thing at a time. Ignoring the slight ache creeping behind my eyes, I walk towards Ms. Bullwig's collage-covered wall. Her office is littered with university pendants and pictures of prior students at graduation, probably her favorites. As I bide my time, attempting to keep my mind clear, I trace a finger over a few. Each one was taken on an impossibly sunny day, in an almost picturesque light. The many smiles shine back at me, and I wonder vaguely just how genuine their happiness is. No one is that happy. They're all just wearing masks, waiting for the moment they can take them off.
Excited about graduation, Miss Conley?
Miss Bullwig's voice jolts me from my thoughts, and I whirl around to face her. The aging woman stands in the doorway, her signature clipboard hugged tightly against her massive chest. She twirls a fluffy purple pin between her short fingers as she gazes past me to the pictures. Yep. I pop the P, leaning on the wall. Ready for the University of Kentucky? The crow's feet at the edge of her dull blue eyes make an appearance as she grins. Ah, yes, Kentucky. Let's talk about that, shall we? Miss Bolwig gestures a hand toward an empty chair in front of her pristine desk before taking a seat in front of her computer. She grabs a file from a stack and opens it with care, tracing the pages of what I assume is my permanent file. It's clean, full of A's, a 1300 SAT score, and not one referral. Captain of the cheerleading squad with perfect attendance since fourth grade. Even on that day, I would have given my left kidney to be at school. My file is uneventful, she determines. I don't stop my face from crumpling. Uneventful? I repeat as though I've misheard her. I mean, I must have. I know it isn't the prize horse at the Derby, but it's still pretty impressive nonetheless. She nods her graying head slowly, still perusing the file. My fists clench at my sides, and I ignore the pain of my stiletto nails piercing into my palm. Can you elaborate, please, Miss Bullwig? The words are meant to be friendly, but coming through bare teeth, I know she hears the bite in them. You have an average record, but nothing to stand out for the program you're seeking in Kentucky. My mouth pops open in protest, but she holds a hand up. Cheer, Captain. Yes, I know. And winning regionals this year will do wonders, but you need to be more than a pretty face and a good tumbler. She spits the last word out as if it's a curse. A good tumbler. Anger and irritation ripple down my body, and I could swear someone turned on the heater. I wipe my brow with the back of my hand as I search for the right words. I'm smart, not like an Amelia Earhart, but I'm smart enough. Most notable of all, I am the best damn cheerleader and captain to come out of Emerald Falls since 1974. Which says something, considering it's a big city with 12 different high schools scrambling for that title. I've brought more recognition to EFH than our most prized football players. Not to mention my girls rock out every damn appearance, which takes real leadership skills. I'm not just a good tumbler. I want to switch a course you're currently in. I know it's late in the semester, but Mr. Jones said he'd be happy to have you. My eyebrows furrow. Mr. Jones teaches AP Sciences. She huffs. To be a slightly above average student, you can be rather dense, Miss Conley. I bite my tongue to keep the retort from seeping out. Whether I like her snide-ass comments or not, the woman is known for making things happen, and I need to get into Kentucky. He is taking his students through competition. I think it would be just the thing to lift your head above the sea of other cheerleaders clawing their way to that university. She keeps talking about some competition, but I'm not listening. The only one I'm worried about is regionals and all the practices in between. Cheerleading didn't come natural to me. I have to work on it every damn day. It's a commitment that most marriages don't have, and I bleed my soul into it each passing second. I deserve to go to Kentucky. Go big or go home, and I'll be damned if I stay here, especially now. I grimace, but finally nod in approval. I don't intend to claw my way anywhere. I've put countless hours into paving the road myself, and I plan to walk on it in 6-inch heels and a fresh manicure, even at the expense of setting half my garden on fire to rid it of one particular weed. She scribbles something on a pad before tearing it from the yellow backing. Good choice. Take this to the registrar and hurry along. His period starts in 10 minutes. I take the paper from her gingerly, careful not to snatch it, murmuring a quick thanks. My eyes drift to the pictures on the wall one last time before slipping out of her office. This had better be worth it. After leaving the registrar, I manage to slink past the cafeteria and down the AP hallway where I take a deep breath. As much as I want to focus on the shitty words of Ms. Bullwig, I can't help but wonder why Spencer acted like he didn't know me. A tingle creeps up my spine, and my ears ring with the whispers of what this could mean. The things people could find out. Image is everything here. I've spent a long time polishing myself to the perfect shine, careful to get inside all the nooks and crannies. He can expose my rusted core in seconds. Fear takes over, weakening my knees to the point I have to lean against the set of lockers on my right. The smooth metal cools my back as I take a few more breaths. I can't let him say anything. My wheels begin to turn, ideas forming on how I can keep my old friend quiet. There is one thing that might... Mija, how did your meeting go? I freeze, and my idea on the verge of creation vanishes, replaced by my shoulders tensing back up. Whirling around, my mother stands at the edge of the hall. She smooths down her navy uniform with one hand and holds onto an oversized trash bin with the other, a misplaced warm smile spread across her face. My eyes dart around, making sure no one is coming. She's never supposed to be here before 5. By then, we don't risk the chance of running into each other. Sounds shitty, but if the Queen of Emerald High's mom was exposed as the school's head custodian, nothing I've done in this place would matter. I'd lose my spot faster than a Morris skirt after a game. The curious part of me wants to ask how she knows I was meeting with Ms. Bullwick, but instead, I feign a bored expression. Dandy. Her smile fades, replaced by the snarl of her true form. Such a stupid girl. I bet you won't make it to that cheer school. I latch a finger around my necklace, pulling it side to side. See ya. I don't wait for a response and turn toward Mr. Jones's class. The last thing I want to do is invoke her wrath and chant someone sing. Straightening my spine, I flip my golden locks over my shoulder and open the door, letting the day's shit show stay behind me. At this point, I don't think it could get much worse. Let's do this. I've never seen a class of kids so engrossed in their work before the bell is even rung. Everyone's head is down, shoved in the pages of their journals, their pens working furiously across the paper. None of them even glance up from their notebooks when they hear me walk in. A small girl with hexagon glasses and inky hair glances my way as I pass before looking back down. After a beat of silence, her head pops back up comically, and she elbows the boy next to her, motioning to me with her chin. It sets off a chain reaction until all eyes are glued on me, a soft whisper floating around the room. I'm used to the effects that come with being Queen of Emerald High, but it doesn't make it any less cringy. Trying not to grimace, I stride over to Mr. Jones, who has his face glued to his computer. His eyes flash to me before returning to the screen. Like the four-eyed girl, he does a double take before standing too abruptly, knocking over what looks to be week-old coffee. I recoil, terrified the dark liquid will land on my white suede heels, and watch him fumble to clean his mess. I'm so sorry, Miss Conley. Not a problem, Mr. Jones. But even so, I take a few cautionary steps backward. After wiping up most of the coffee, he ambles around the desk, rising to his full height and straightens a wrinkled candy corn tie. Class, I'd like to introduce you to our newest member, Liliana Conley. His confirmation that I'm joining the class sends an even louder murmur vibrating through the room, but I ignore it, holding up a hand in a light wave. Please, just Lily is fine. Mr. Jones beams at me, rubbing his stubble. Of course, I'm going to pair you up with the lad back there. He motions to the table on the far left side of the classroom, where the only student who hasn't looked up is scribbling in his notebook. Mr. Jones leans a little closer, dropping his voice to a whisper. He's having a hard time adjusting to the idea of a partner, but I know you'll be able to work it out. I raise an eyebrow in question. Partner? He nods. Didn't Ms. Bullwig tell you? Tilting my head, I wait for him to elaborate. The woman told me a lot, 90% of which has already been blocked out for the well-being of my mental health. He shifts back, swallowing hard around his evident discomfort. You'll be the fill-in we need for the science competition. We had a student move away. My eyes widen of their own accord, and I feel my jaw tick, but I recover quickly, smiling at Mr. Jones. I knew there was a competition, but I didn't think I had to participate. After granting him a curt nod, I stroll to the back and sit at the edge of the seat, setting my purse on the worn lab table and cross my feet at the ankle. A perfect lady's pose. As if he's just realized I've entered the room, Spencer's mesmerizing brown eyes collide with mine.
Chapter 3. Spencer. Lily's pupils constrict under the light, letting her natural brown color peek from beneath the contacts. It's the first I've seen of them since middle school, and I knew her better than I knew myself. There was a time when her eyes were the light leading me out of my dark-ass cave. But that Liliana has come and gone, leaving nothing but a cutout of a basic bitch with a bad attitude named Lily. I scoff, clenching my teeth at the thought of all the lost time I spent on her during those summers. I could have been with my mom, or studying more. Hell, maybe even learning a fucking sport. Either way, my time is the one thing she won't be able to waste again. Staring back down at my journal, I shift my shoulders away from her. Maybe if I ignore her long enough, she'll get the hint. Might even get lucky, and she'll go away. A moment of silence passes before Lily dips her head low, tilting it to read my scribbles. I move my body so I can't even see her in my periphery. I hope she feels the heat radiating from me and backs off, but she either doesn't notice or doesn't care.
So, what are we working on, Spence?
I'm not sure which word pisses me off more. The way she holds the last syllable of my name and sounds like a fucking snake, or the fact that she said we, as if I would actually consider letting her help me with my project. Damn Maurice for moving. I don't look at her, but hiss my words to match her reptilian tone. I don't think I'm letting you lay a finger on this project. Her chair scrapes across the tile, forcing me to glance over my shoulder at her. Her small nose is scrunched, as if she's smelled something grotesque, and I have to bite back a laugh of satisfaction. I'm sure she's not used to being talked back to by any of her minions, or anyone in the school, for that matter. I've only been back for 2 months, but it doesn't take long to learn what the school thinks of Lily Conley. Captain of an elite cheer squad, sure, but what they talk about most is how she has the aura of a fucking goddess, and is every guy's wet dream. They say she doesn't talk too much, rather not get her hands dirty, and instead lets her team carry out any trash she needs to dispose of. Nothing like the Liliana I know. New. Others say she's the female version of her best friend, Blaze. He's the star running back of the school, and like dear Liliana here, he runs this place. I've only run into him once, and that was enough. He has multicolored eyes, one a metal gray, the other a piercing dark blue. It's unsettling when he looks at you, almost as if he can read your thoughts. It makes sense that they're friends, though. Both seem void of any feelings and reek of entitlement.
You don't have a choice, fuckwad.
Lily snatches my journal from under me, and when I snap my head to her, my damn glasses fall off. I ignore her snickers as my hands find the frame and shove them back on. My pulse becomes erratic, ticking in my veins so violently I can feel my heartbeat in my toes. If you think I'm going to let you have any input whatsoever, you've lost what little fucking brain you've got up there. She giggles, and it's so full of fake sweetness and corn syrup, I wonder if I can get secondhand diabetes.
Was that meant to insult me? Come on, Spencer, you're smarter than that. Well, used to be, at least.
She tilts her chin and looks to the ceiling as if thinking about something.
I don't remember.
I grind my molars, anger flushing through my body as she stands and sashays to the front. She whispers to Mr. Jones, whose face blooms a light pink, before he nods and hands her a slip. When she walks out, the rage doesn't leave with her. It intensifies. I have one fear in life. One. Last I checked, we shared the same sentiments. We go about them in different ways, but the roots are the same. Being forgotten. It's easy to lose yourself to an addiction, an obsession, society, or illness. It's even easier for the world to forget you. My mother, once a renowned photographer, made it her life's mission to capture people in unforgettable ways. She says everyone should leave a mark, or else there's no point in enduring all the torture this life will throw at you. It's always felt like a silly fear, worrying if people would remember you. But when I told Lily, she understood. That's when she told me about her parents, a father that was never home, and a mother that never left her room.
It's something she didn't want to experience ever again, being invisible to the people that are supposed to love you the most. I sit back and sigh.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?